What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at WeightWatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
Katie Halper. I'm the host of The Katie Halper Show, which you can find on SoundCloud and iTunes, Facebook, and Twitter. And don't forget to sign up to our Patreon, which is patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show, because there you can find bonus content, including extended interviews. We will be doing a live taping of The Katie Halper Show on June 30th at Caveat in New York City. That's 21A Clinton Street. And you can go to caveat.nyc to get tickets and get them for a discounted price if you go now. You can use the promo code KHALPERINSIDER. That's KHALPERINSIDER. Again, that's KHALPERINSIDER. And our special guest will be none other than Thomas Frank. Thomas Frank, of course, is the author of Listen Liberal or Whatever Happened to the Party of the People and What's the Matter with Kansas. He writes for places like Harper's, The Guardian, and he is the founder of The Baffler magazine. And Thomas Frank has a brand spanking new book coming out called Rendezvous with Oblivion, Reports from a Sinking Society, and it's a collection of his writings. See you there, June 30th, 7 p.m. at Caveat at 21 Clinton Street in Manhattan with our special guest, Thomas Frank. On today's show, we talk to Phoenix Kalita and William J. Jackson. They are the hosts, the co-hosts of a very good podcast called The Black Podcast. And we also talked to Connor Habib. He's a sex worker advocate. And since we just had Pride, and Pride has become so corporatized, and it's like Pride slash cop solidarity.
Get your Pride Jamba Juice.
Exactly. I wanted to talk to some people who would give a kind of a different view on that.
A less corporate approach,
yeah.
Really, you know, I would say that true liberation is just complete integration into the marketplace.
Into the free market. That's freedom, right?
Yeah, that's freedom.
Exactly. It's like if Milton Friedman were gay, he'd be perfect.
Make every consumer feel comfortable buying products
and exploiting
from the exact same store.
Yes. So just so people understand when you're listening, just for some context, FOSTA and CESTAS, that stands for the Fight Online Sex Trafficking Act and the Stop Enabling Sex Traffickers Act. Surprisingly enough, those are things that politicians get behind, those acts. And it makes web publishers legally liable if anyone uses their platform to post anything that could be construed as advertisement for paid sex work, consensual or otherwise. Sounds great, right? Who doesn't want to oppose trafficking?
We should get rid of Tinder.
Probably save a lot of people a lot of heartache and hard work. Sounds great, except it makes sex workers way less safe because it makes it harder for them to find clients online rather than on the streets where there's fewer advanced safety precautions. Also incentivizes websites to crack down hard on any sexual content and sex work discussion, given the risk they'll be found liable for. So Craigslist ended up deleting its entire personal section. Microsoft has started cracking down on sexual usage of Skype, etc. And what makes that extremely dangerous is that that also means that, you know, people would use these websites to warn other people about dangerous predators.
Right. So it created stop gaps and it created
like a screening
filtering system. Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, so all these people who are coming out as, you know, anti-trafficking, they really have blood on their hands and it's not acceptable. And sex work is the last, I think, one of the last areas where people are just, I think people are better in general about like drug use than they are about sex work. And they're related only in that there's a major
harm reduction aspect to it. So some people get how, like, look, you may not want someone you know to be doing drugs. You may not like drugs. You may not approve of them. But you realize that making them illegal endangers more people, harms more people, kills people.
It also empowers.
Yes.
It empowers law enforcement to abuse their, it incentivizes their abuse of their power.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. My listeners out there, Gabe, we got to watch the show and talk about it. 7 Seconds. Really good. Such a great show on Netflix.
It sounds like it's about rodeo.
It kind of is in a weird way. It's about cops in Jersey City. It's so great. Phoenix Khalid is a Chicago-based Afro-Latina loudmouth and local activist with a passion for advocating for Black women, the LGBTQ community, and the sex work community. When not buried in yarn and DIY projects, she can be found co-hosting the Black Podcast or on Twitter. She can be found on Twitter at Uppity Negress. That's UPPITTYNEGRESS. William J. Jackson is a vocal and language artist from Pierce County, Washington State. He's a pro-labor leftist, environmentalist, and anti-capitalist. He hopes to contribute to taking resources from a profiteering system and redistributing them to micro-societies of socialist communities.
Whoa, he sounds like Robin Hood.
He is. He's the host and producer for Wine Cellar Media webcast and podcast, curator of WineCellarMedia.com news, editor for the Reading in the Shade blog, freelance rapper, independent news and punditry. Really excited to be talking to our guests today. They're people I've been wanting to speak to for a while. So welcome to the Katie Halper Show.
Hey.
Thank you.
Hey. Thanks for coming. Can you tell us a little bit about what your podcast is and how it started and how you guys met each other?
I had always been doing audio already, performances, and I've been blue collar my entire adult life, and I've always used monetizing audio online since about 2002, 2003. So that's just something I've always done. And then in 2010, I get this device called an iPod Touch, and somebody I knew at that time was like, hey, you can listen to podcasts now. And I'm like, what is that? And I go into the iTunes application and find it, and I check out some programs, and I'm like, well, Jesus Christ, I can do that. You know, like, I already have the microphone and everything that I use for recording anyway, so all I have to do is find out what an RSS feed is and do it. And I started the program. I called it Father Teresa's Wine Cellar because at that time, like a lot of Black atheists on the internet were finding each other and having a good time clowning. So I got in on that. But then after a while, I mean, just saying, hey, I'm atheist and not religious, that's boring. All right. So I want to do a news and comment, naturally gravitated to doing anti-capitalism, anti-imperialism. Sex workers' rights and trans rights sort of came at the same time in the same episode when I was just reading news about trans rights and found out that, like, they would be arrested if they were, you know, stopped and frisked in New York and just had condoms on them. Boom, we're going to call you a sex worker or a prostitute, if you will, and arrest them. So then those became issues on the program. And then in late 2013, there was that performer. Who was that performer that was going to do the slave show at the plantation party?
Oh, I don't remember. Oh,
okay, I completely forgot.
I'm sorry.
But a lot of us came together and I met Phoenix Khalid.
Oh, Annie DeFranco.
Annie DeFranco. Yeah, she was going to do a, oh my God. It was like a workshop.
Yeah. It was like a woman's retreat or something to like come together and empower women.
Yeah,
and
it happened to be at a slave plantation.
Yeah.
And I think her response was like, well, you know, lots of places have bad histories, or like, you know, there are lots of places that slaves built, but yeah, it's a little bit insensitive. And there are places that aren't literally like recuperated or recovered plantations. And you'd probably have to, if you ever wanted to use something like that, you'd probably have to, like, acknowledge that. Anticipate
how. Well, I think a big part of her problem was that she came in with the idea that, like, but we're bringing positive energy, so the horrific, like, history of this doesn't matter. And that's not how it works.
It's a really interesting question of, like, what the appropriate way to respond to historical monuments.
Buildings and bridges are made to bend in the wind to withstand the world as what it takes.
I come across Phoenix Collider, you know, when folks are just responding to that, and there's all sorts of conversation on the Facebooks and the whole World Wide Webernets in general. And I end up talking to Phoenix Collider in private messages and on the telephone. I'm like, Jesus Christ, this nigga's fucking ill, you know? And I was like, more people need to hear this nigga, man. But she's in these groups in the Facebooks, these little whack-ass groups with these fucking dorks. And I'm like, that's all you're doing, man? Come on the program. And, like, she come and talk some shit on the podcast, and it's raw. And then, like, there are people that start tuning into the program more so to hear her intellect than my, you know, ranting about the NSA and whatnot. You know, so folks really want to hear Phoenix Collider more. You know, and now that was 2014. Here we are, 2018. She's flying out to D.C., flying out. And that became the idea was, make more people hear Phoenix Collider. All the other issues are still there, but make more people hear this raw ass nigga right here.
So you're like her hype man?
Yes.
Yeah.
She is.
Nice. And how's that? Is that an okay dynamic for both of you?
Yeah, I think it's a good dynamic. But, you know, we were talking there, and then I was like, well, I'm just going to talk to him some more. And then, you know, everything was going on with Annie DeFranco, just other general social justice stuff. And it's like, we have a lot in common. We should talk more. And then it was going on the podcast, and here we are.
Environmentalism was always there. Reproductive rights, that was always there. Always talked about white supremacy and whatnot. The way my biological mother tried to raise me leftist before I went into foster care. Before she died, October 15th, 1993.
But how did she try to raise you left? Like, what kind of values or ideas did she instill in you?
Environmentalism. Like, anytime there was somebody doing a talk about that, she took me to that. She had me watching and analyzing George Carlin and then telling me he was talking about. Yeah, like, you know, when I was 7 years old, you know, right. She'd get me home from school and she'd be like, all right, now he's talking about feminism. But notice where he's saying, like, oh, they don't give a shit about black women's problems and whatnot.
I've noticed that most of these feminists are white middle class women. They don't give a shit about black women's problems. They don't care about Latino women. All they're interested in is their own reproductive freedom and their pocketbooks.
But, like, he agrees with him here and there.
But when it comes to changing the language, I think they make some good points. Because we do think in language. And so the quality of our thoughts and ideas can only be as good as the quality of our language. So maybe some of this patriarchal shit ought to go away. I think spokesman ought to be spokesperson. I think chairman ought to be chairperson. I think mankind ought to be humankind.
Yeah, she put in her effort.
Then what about you, Phoenix? Were you raised by lefty parents?
Absolutely not. I was actually born on the west side of Chicago. Went through foster care pretty early. Ended up getting adopted into a very white conservative family. They actually voted for Trump in the last election. So, like, the fact that I can, you know, breathe with my mouth shut, I think is kind of an accomplishment. I feel like I'm winning. It was incredibly, like, racist and traumatizing, basically, my whole childhood.
Your family was, too? Oh, yeah. Not just the neighborhood? Like, your actual parents?
I have not seen my biological parents since I was, like, 6 or 7.
Sorry, so. I meant your foster parents. That's what I meant.
Oh, my foster parents. Oh, yeah. The whole area was traumatized because, like, they lived in a white community. It was, like, a middle-class white area. The whole thing was conservative, and everybody was, you know, oh, the illegals are taking our jobs, right. And, you know, the problem with the blacks is that they, you know, whatever.
Live in my neighborhood now.
So that was kind of, like, my whole upbringing. So it was not pleasant.
So both of you were in foster care?
Yes.
Yeah.
What were the ages that you were in it?
I got the paperwork signed when I was 14, but I never really was in, like, a general house the whole time. Like, sometimes you'd just be like, you're going to be over here for a week on the east side of town. And you're going to be over here for, you know, a month or so on the north end of town. You know, there was one house I was at the most, but, you know, I never really knew where I was going to be. Sometimes, especially in the early point of it, like when I was 12, sometimes I might just be like, and sleeping outside today. You know, you never know.
And what about pride? How was your pride? You want to give us your, like, you know, your hot take on pride and its limitations?
I don't celebrate pride. That's my hot take. Because pride is not actually a safe space for most LGBTQIA people. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, which is something you're not supposed to say. You're like, oh, pride, and go out and celebrate yourself, and love is love is love, and wedding cakes, or what the fuck ever. But it's like, y'all inviting cops to pride. Yeah. Cops really love to fuck up trans people. Yeah. Like, I don't know if everyone has missed that memo. You know, when it comes to police, you know, brutalizing the LGBTQIA community, it's a big deal. And especially, like, within the context of sex work, because, you know, for me, everything always goes back to, like, race, class, and sex work.
Right.
But it's, like, a lot of people who were put out of their families for coming out as queer or coming out as gay or whatever, or trans, end up being on the streets, and they have to do survival sex work in order to survive. So it's, like, now y'all want to tell them, come to Pride and celebrate yourself, and rub shoulders with the same people that sexually harass you, steal your money, beat you, rape you, and threaten to arrest you every other day of the month. Like, that's right. What we're doing. You know, so it's like, you know, fuck cops. And Pride has also gotten really fucking corporate. And it's like, anytime you start letting corporations in, that's when you start losing the authenticity of the event. So now it's like a very, you know, white, gay, upper middle class bourgeoisie thing where it's like, oh, you know, we can go to Pride and we're buying our, you know, $27 Pride shirts. We have right. our Pride haircut. We have all of our Pride products. And it's like, what about poor niggas that can't afford shit?
Mm-hmm.
Can they have an event where they can be safe from both corporatism and police presence?
Right.
Because those are the people who started Pride, right? People like, you know, we have a very like,
Disneyfied?
Weird. Yes. Like this weird focus, like LGBTQ means like conventionally attractive white gay men.
Right.
Maybe a lesbian couple. And it's like,
yeah.
No, you know, when Pride started, it was, you know, LGBTQ activists, it was lesbians, it was trans people, it was people who were angry and in the streets, it was non-white people, it was people with disabilities, it was people who were sex workers. And now we just have this really polished package thing, and Pride, it's not only is it not fun, it's also not safe. So I'm not trying to fuck with all that, right. You know? And of course, just for me personally, like I have an extra level of aggravation because I identify as bisexual and people get really upset by that for some reason. I don't understand why.
Because you're supposed to be just like, because that doesn't exist? Who is,
Well, like, the thing is that, like, people get, like, people, a lot of people in the LGBTQ community get upset because their thing is like, well, but how can you be bi if you're in a relationship with a man?
That's so stupid. Like, I've never understood like, that critique what? Of it.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know, the same reason that you're still gay when you're single? Like, what
yeah.
the fuck?
Yeah.
What the fuck? But yeah, and then there's like, I don't know, there's just a lot of arguments around how people need to identify, and like, you have to identify as queer, or you can't identify as queer because queer is a slur, and it's not right to reclaim it, or we have to reclaim it, and it's just, it makes me tired as fuck. I'm old and I'm tired.
You know what is ironic, coming full circle, is Ani DeFranco, who I grew up listening to, I'm not gonna yes. lie. She has this song called In or Out. Their eyes are all asking, are you in or are you out, and I think, oh man, what is this about? It's about people wanting to put you in boxes. Some days the line I walk turns out to be straight. Other days the line tends to deviate. I've got no criteria for sex or race. I just want to hear your voice. I just want to see your face. I got spots, I got stripes too. I've got spots, I've got stripes too. She disappointed a lot of fans, I think, when she married a man.
Oh, yeah.
She was like a very coffeehouse lesbian aesthetic, short hair, like shaved mm-hmm. head, and like folk singer.
Yeah, folk singer. Yeah.
You said coffeehouse lesbian.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm learning the white vernacular.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Got to spread that word. We got to bring. We're going to unite the world.
Okay.
This is the, yes. the multiracial organizing alliance that we need will be built with based on like stereotype after stereotype. Brick by brick, stereotype by stereotype. In a coffee shop in a city, which is every coffee shop in every city, on a day which is every day. So can you talk to us about how you guys got involved in sex work or sex worker activism, organizing, advocacy?
Yes. Because I actually did sex work earlier on in my life, because bills exist and homelessness really sucks.
Wait, doesn't that mean you're not allowed to talk about it? Because I think only people who've never done it,
save
sex workers are allowed to actually have opinions on it.
You know, it was the funny thing. I thought that I would actually have valid opinions, but it turns out all I had to do was watch documentaries, never actually do the job, and then I could be an expert on the field. You know, PhD in horology from watching documentaries. Like, really, it's...
Phoenix just wrote a great piece. Great timing. Just so I get credit, I wanted to do this even before she blew up on Vice, on the motherboard at Vice. She wrote a piece called "They Think They Have a PhD in Horology: How Lobbying for Sex Worker Rights Helps Educate Us All." And the subheadline of that is "Sex Worker and Activist Phoenix Kalita on How Talking to Politicians About Her Rights on Capitol Hill Was a Little Scary, but Well Worth It." You actually open the piece by saying, "Hi, you can read it later if you want. I don't want to, like, you're here and I'm literally reading your words, but I have in front of me. So, hi, my name is Phoenix, and I'm an 18-year veteran of the sex work industry. In some ways, my history around the sex work industry is incredibly cliche. I got involved in the industry out of economic necessity. I was a teenager who also happened to be a single parent that needed money. Some of my experiences around the industry are a little less cliche. Someday I'll tell you all about the guy who lived at a Trump property and paid me to burn his genitals. Life can be weird like that." So we'll get, maybe by the end of this episode, you'll share that anecdote with us. But
the emphasis is that no longer doing it because it's illegal and sestafosta happened. So you know, we emphasize what we do. So just being part of the community has always been really important as far as forming a sense of identity, as far as having, you know, people who understand you, people who get you, who accept you. So, you know, sex worker activism advocacy was just the natural progression of things.
Can you tell us about what you did in Washington, D.C.? The June 1st and June 2nd, right?
Yes. Were
the, yes. Is it an, it's a newish holiday, I guess?
Yeah, it's a newish holiday. International Whores Day or International Sex Worker Day, depending where you fall in relation to the industry, you can choose which term you use. Please don't say whore if you're not actually a sex worker or haven't been a sex worker.
So, but, like, does that mean, like, people really should say International Sex Workers Day? It's like the N-word, kind of, but for...
Yeah, it's like, it's one of those reclamation. It's like it's a reclamation thing for sex workers because that is a derogatory term. So, yeah.
Okay, so non-sex workers should say International Sex Workers Day.
Sex Workers Day, yes.
Okay,
yes.
Heads up, everyone. Okay.
So what we did, I guess we should start with sestafosta, right?
Yeah, sure, yeah.
So basically, it's legislation that was recently passed. It was, I cannot emphasize enough, a bipartisan effort. Both Democrats and Republicans overwhelmingly support this piece of shit. And Trump signed it, so here we are. And the idea is that this bill is supposed to reduce the amount of sex trafficking online. Kamala Harris is one of the people that's really been in this argument. She was like, "Oh, we got to shut down Backpage," and then, you know, the Craigslist personals went down and things like that. Because what they did is basically websites are now responsible for what third parties post. So if somebody posts, you know, an ad saying I'm offering, you know, X sexual service for X amount of money, now basically the website that is allowing that ad to be posted is going to be held legally accountable. You know, so that was never the case before. And they're like, "Oh, this is going to stop trafficking." But really, all it did is remove places that sex workers can screen clients, places that sex workers can advertise. And now they just lost a bunch of actual trafficked people because they don't have a digital footprint to trace anymore. So basically, it made everything worse for everybody. Like what I did in DC, Kate D'Adamo put on, you know, created the event and created the first Sex Worker Lobby Day. It was the day before International Sex Workers Day. And the idea was to go and get a bunch of actual sex workers, current or former informants. Check me out.
Remember that snow song? It's great.
I do. Okay. Yes.
Oh, I know exactly what you're going to do there.
Oh, yeah.
Because I listen to the program.
You know, I'm going to cut it in. Yeah. Well.
no sé de me slow me I go blam Ali keep on bum bam take the money slow me
slam so former and current sex workers as well as sex worker allies and activists to basically go to Capitol Hill. And we had meetings set up, you know, with different lawmakers. And the idea was to sit down and be like, hey, you signed onto Sesta Fosta. You probably didn't realize all the unintended consequences. Here's the unintended consequences. Can we talk about maybe including sex workers the next time you want to make sex work legislation?
Right.
You know, and kind of trying to create those sort of bonds. And the thing that we kept hearing was all these lawmakers were like, well, we didn't really read it. It just kind of got like passed through like real sudden. And it was about child trafficking. So like right. I had to sign it, you know, you had to, cause children trafficked bad, you know, and like nobody, you're right. And so nobody like really read the bill. Nobody really understood the ramifications. And when we were talking to people like, hey, so just so you know, the way Sesta Fosta is set up, like now harm reduction is illegal under this policy. So things like sex workers had like bad date websites and lists, right? So if you know, you saw somebody who did turn out to be abusive or, you know, stole your money or physically threatened you or, you know, whatever, we, you know, would sex workers would pass those names around and be like, hey, you know, here's this person's email, here's their name, here's their license plate number, here's a photo. This is what they did. Try to avoid this person. And there were these internal networks of sex workers trying to keep each other safe, but passing that info around on the internet is now illegal, right? So like, what do you think? Like, how fucked up is that? It's illegal for one sex worker to email another sex worker and be like, hey, this person is dangerous.
So we can have like, girl, don't date him or whatever, that website, but you can't do it when it's actually right. People who could like
die.
Yeah. Kill you, harm you. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, that kind of stuff. Or even now, like, harm reduction, like, activism, you know, sending emails and organizing events online about, like, condom distribution is illegal, you know? So it's like, why would you think that a bill that makes it illegal for sex workers to talk about dangerous clients and where to find condoms is going to help anybody?
And is anything going to change now, do you think, with the FOSTA SESTA stuff?
I think it's too early to call it. And that was like something staffers kept asking us. They're like, well, like, do you have any statistics? And I'm like, nigga, we don't have statistics. The shit passed like 5 weeks ago. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I can tell you that in the last, you know, 2 months that 5 sex workers have died and that 8 are missing.
Yeah.
I can tell you that. But, you know, I can also tell you that when, Craigslist and Backpage were up, that the actual national homicide rate of women dropped. I can tell you that. And those are gone. So I'm, you know, just interested to see. Well, I say interested, but you know what I mean? Like, it's not good interested. It's just trying to be aware of, like, you know, is that homicide rate going to creep back up again? But I think that a big thing is when you point out what they did, and no sugarcoating it, being honest, like, look, you stopped allowing people to be able to talk about people who've raped them. And now those rapists are free to prey on other people. Like, is that what you want? You know, so I think that maybe just in that, for that aspect alone, we might see some changes.
Right.
But
like, so that they're just, people don't have people's deaths on their, like, blood, literal blood on their hands.
Yeah.
Because this basically now, like, makes it harder for people to warn other people about dangerous people. So it's kind of hard to see how that wouldn't have an effect.
Right. Well, and, you know, and another aspect of it, too, is that now workers who don't have anywhere to advertise, they're going back to street work, and the pimps are waiting. Mm. Like, the pimps are fucking pimps love this shit. This bill is good for them. It's good for traffickers, because now there's more people in desperate situations who don't have anywhere to advertise, and so they're making bad deals with people who are promising to get them business or be their managers or promote them.
Right.
So, yeah, like, I actually fully anticipate, I'm not sure that the government will ever admit it, but I fully anticipate rates of trafficked people going up, because we don't know where to find trafficked people now, because they don't have the digital footprint, because the ads aren't up, and now more people are in proximity to really bad people, like traffickers and pimps. So it's like,
word.
You know, because that's like, people, I don't think people realize that, like, pimps have shit on lock. Whereas, like, if you go to an area, they're like, this is where I work, and if you work here, you work for me. People don't necessarily realize, like, that's, like, it is very territorial kind of shit. I don't think people necessarily realize that. So it's like, when sex workers go to street work, that's what they're going to run into. And a lot of sex workers now came up through their careers during the Backpage era or during the Craigslist era, they don't know how to navigate street level shit because they never had to do it before. So that leaves them open to making a lot of really like stupid new mistakes. And that leads to bad situations that they might not be able to get out of.
It's a law that they claim that it's to protect victims of trafficking, right? And there's this, like, they conflate consensual sex work, basically, and, like, kidnapping. I actually was talking to, I don't know if you know Connor Habib.
Yes.
So I was talking to him about this. He and I were saying how people conflate, in general, like, consensual sex with, like, a quote-unquote infidelity or philandering.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
consent makes them so different. Like, right. being kidnapped or being an indentured servant or a slave, basically, and being trafficked is so different from being someone who decides that this is what they are going to do, to the extent that anyone has a choice when we're living in the capitalist world system, right?
Right, right.
But that's, like, a job versus having absolutely, like, no consent. And so I think that, like, inherently, laws that aim to protect those same populations and pretend that they're the same things aren't mm-hmm. going to actually protect and empower people.
They aren't. And a lot of it is really wrapped up in just basically like puritanical bullshit, like that moralistic panic where they're like, no little girl dreams of growing up to be a sex worker. Therefore, anyone who is a sex worker must be forced into it and is a victim of trafficking. And it's like, nobody really grows up and dreams about working in a fucking call center and being cussed out all the fuck long day either. And yet right. here the fuck we are. So it's like, you know, they conflate it in that aspect because it is policing women's sexuality, policing the ways in which women are allowed to make money under this system. And it's also just very, very convenient to not listen to sex workers and to say, oh, we don't have to listen to you because you all are victims, so we're going to save you. So it also feeds that like savior complex bullshit.
Well, yeah. Now, but that's because you sell your bodies and coal miners don't.
Yeah, what is the difference? Like, people really seem to think that there's a difference. Like, someone I was talking to is like, oh no, but it's different because sex work is the only job that involves penetration. And it was just such a random, like, okay.
But you know what? That's actually a huge misconception around sex work is that it, like, is literally fucking. It's not necessarily, right? Because there are people who want, like, professional BDSM services. Like, they literally just want to be tied up in flogged. Like, you don't actually have sex. Like,
I like the way you're putting that as examples. Like, that'll calm people who think penetration is bad or problematic. Like, don't worry, it's fine. It's just a lot, good old fashioned domming a lot of the time. And
it's like,
don't worry,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, like,
nobody got penetrated though. It's okay.
Right. Yeah, exactly. No penetration. Just diapers.
The obsession with what sexual contact, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and like that's the big deal.
No, and I, you know, that is one of the conceptions is that it always involves sex. People like phone sex is a type of sex work. You know, camming is sex work. So I mean, there's all those things that don't necessarily involve sex. But then even if it does involve penetration, like I know I'm gonna piss people off, but may I ask? What is the difference between a sex worker and a housewife who has been taught that it is her job to keep her husband sexually satisfied? Is that not also a job that involves penetration? No? That's different? Oh, okay.
Like, I mean, I think there's two things. So there's like you were saying, not all sex work is the same. Yes, all sex work, not all sex work, which is true. But I also think it's like we might as well just go to the stuff that actually makes people, because people don't realize how much values inform that. Like how pure, like you were saying, puritanical or just, it's just so arbitrary. Like, why is that something that makes it inherently bad? Whereas like working in a slaughterhouse isn't inherently bad. Like, most people who identify anywhere from liberal to the left, certainly to the left of liberal, like we all believe that workers, even when they do jobs we don't want to do, like they deserve rights and dignity. Like mm-hmm. we don't just say like, let's make working in a slaughterhouse illegal.
Right. I honestly think it's just that people don't like the idea of women having sex outside of patriarchal standards and norms. You know, that's something that's just seen as dirty. And I think it also feeds into ideas about male sexuality too. There's like a lot of stigma around the idea that, you know, like, oh, if you have to pay for sex, something's wrong with you. Either you're like super abusive or like you're incapable of finding a partner. And women have historically been responsible with gatekeeping everything from men, from emotions to sexuality. So it's like, not only are sex workers bad because women aren't supposed to be having sex, and most sex workers are women, so not only they're bad because they're having sex outside of marriage, they're also bad because they're allowing bad men to also have sex. So it's like, oh,
yeah. A friend of mine once said, like, well, would you want your boyfriend to go to a prostitute? And I was like, no, but I also wouldn't want my boyfriend to like be in the Young Republicans, or now I wouldn't even want him to be in, like, you know, like the Young Dems, honestly, unless he was a real Bernie-crat. But again, it's like this fear, you know, like we have to stamp out sex work so that I'm not worried about my husband or boyfriend going to see a sex worker. Mm-hmm. And I think she even said, like, well, at least he'd have to like go abroad if it's illegal here. Like, so like make them like use sex work over there so they don't have to do it here.
Which is also like, okay, let's make it illegal and see if that stops it. It's been illegal for decades. Like, what the fuck?
It's funny. My mind is just went back to the death penalties, because I'm against the death penalty in principle and in practice. Like you were saying, it's, we have a, like, we kill innocent people. Also, it's racist and classist. But besides that, like, even if I knew 100% that people were guilty, I would just be against it. Even if I thought in principle, like, sex work was like an unfortunate thing that happened, like, I would still be like, okay, well, it's bad, but what's going to be worse? Like, illegalizing it and criminalizing it and pushing it into the underground, or letting sex workers have as much access to whatever the things that other workers have? Like, it's not going to, no, what's going to happen? People honestly think they're going to get rid of it. It's like the oldest thing in the world.
Mm-hmm. I think that speaks to, depending on the individual, either the cognitive dissonance involved of thinking that pushing it, like, because the idea is that sex workers are somehow like broken, damaged victims who need help, you know, but it's like pushing it underground makes sex workers more unsafe. So you're literally putting people in more proximity to physical danger of being assaulted, physically assaulted, sexually assaulted, being murdered, being extorted, being blackmailed. Like, you're literally putting somebody closer to danger. So there's like a cognitive dissonance. You're saying that they're victims who need help, but let me support this legislation or these ideas that make them more unsafe. Or that speaks to your sadism, that you're like, yeah, I think you're already fucked up, but here's how I can make it worse for you.
Yeah. Or like some weird tough love-ism, right? Where they think that they're like gonna like force them to get like pull themselves up by their bootstraps, I guess. Or whatever straps.
Yeah, that's just sadism.
Yeah, I think it is sadism effectively. I think it's like, I mean, I don't know even how much it's worth getting into it. I was hearing your William, on one of the episodes you spoke about how you won't even debate people on sex work. And I totally understand what you're saying, because like, you're not going to validate or kind of sanction this view, this like draconian sadistic view that says that it should be decriminalized. And I think, Phoenix, you were saying like, yeah, they're just sadists. And I think that's definitely true for a lot of people. But I also think that there's just something where, from a distance, like, I don't think that Lena Dunham or like is a sadist. I know it's like the most unpopular thing it's to ever say anything remotely like redemptive, or I'm not a Lena Dunham fan. I just mean that, like, I think that lots of people, they just don't know enough about it, and they're definitely privileged and out of touch, and they just feel bad. It's like, I feel like some people are just sadists and other people are just infantilizing.
Yeah, definitely. And for the people who are like legitimately like ignorant in the case of like not knowing and understanding, what they actually need to do is shut the fuck up, though, because it's okay that you don't. Right. Like, it's okay that you don't know. But until you do know, you need to stop ruining it for other people and hurting people, because that's like what's happening, whether that's your intent or not. That's the result.
And have your guys' views on sex work changed over time?
No.
No. So you never had to grapple with it, like, as a, like, you did it as a teenager, you said, right?
Yes.
And you didn't have any conflicts? Like, I'm not saying you should. This is not some kind of, like, reverse psychology. I'm just saying, were there societal pressures and norms that you had to struggle against? Or
I pretty much saw it then the same way I see it now, where it's just like, well, this is work and I need money, so let me go do this shift. Basically was the attitude. There were struggles with it, but that was just because of like social stigma, where it was like, you know, really uncomfortable knowing that, like, you know, what I had done the night before, you know, with a client, and then I'm sitting around a group of friends who are like, oh my God, dead hooker jokes are the best thing in the world. And you're like, oh, if we could not, you know? So in that aspect, like, it at times it's been very difficult, but as far as like me personally, like my morality on it or my opinion of it, like it's a job. You just fucking go to work and do the work.
Did you were you able to tell people about it? Did you lose friends over it? Did you like not tell people about it?
I mean, I've never told my family, which might be a hilarious Thanksgiving dinner at some point.
Yeah, definitely film that.
Best Facebook Live ever.
Yeah.
But at times I have told friends. I've definitely lost friends over it. I've lost friends who thought that, you know, like, oh, this person's like I'm hypersexual and I'm going to try to steal their boyfriend. Yeah. And it's like, no, I'm just working. It's not even, I wasn't even into it then, you know?
Going to try to steal their boyfriend by saying, you have to pay this much for one session and then go back. But this is how I'm stealing you.
Don't lie to yourself.
Yes, I'm going to steal their boyfriends by making them pay for sex. Yeah. Obviously, that's the best. So, you know, like in that aspect, there's some people I just had to cut out of my life because they were toxic about it. Cause you know, like my childhood, I'm not going to lie. It was a fucking ball of trauma. Uh-huh. Physically, like, you know, as I said, the family I was placed with was very conservative, white, religious Christians. And you know, that was the kind of thing where you just, you know, if you hit your kids enough, it eventually, whatever lesson you have will sink in. So there was like frequent beatings. There was lots of sexual abuse. There was, you know, lots of like very forced, you know, like you have to attend church and conform to our particular religious standard and things like that. So it was like just very abusive in a lot of ways. Yeah. So when I told people when I was older who knew me when I was younger, like, oh, you know, yeah, so they're like, oh, is it because of your parents?
Totally, right. There's like a pathologizing it, right?
I was like, or maybe it's because I'm a broke bitch and I need money.
Broke, not broken. That would be a good slogan. I mean, people say that about like with women also, that being, you're like, they're lesbians for the same reason. Like these people are really like, there's a high correlation between abuse and sex work. There's a high correlation between sexual trauma and sex work.
It's also, again, like if you sit down and think about it, that's a really whack argument because so I don't know if you saw the recent surveys and studies they did speaking to Black women. It was somewhere around 50% of Black women reported being sexually abused or surviving an attempt of sexual abuse before age 18. Like, if sexual abuse is what makes somebody go to sex work, by that logic, half of Black women would be sex workers. You know, like, the rates of Indigenous women who are raped and sexually abused are astronomical.
Right.
But they're not all sex workers.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, I mean, we have a very pervasive rape culture in and of itself, you know? So it's like, there's not nearly as many people who are sex workers as there are people who have been sexually abused. So that argument really just doesn't like hold up. So
yeah.
It's such a bizarre argument to me, like honestly.
People lots of times don't get it. It's such anecdotal. Not everyone who's abused will tell you about it, right? And
right.
So people are already looking for this narrative. So they may ask a sex worker if that happened. They may not ask a landscaper. Or it's like so hypocritical, though, because it's like you claim to be wanting to help these people, then you just actually make them less safe. And it's not like you provide anything else. It's not like even like within the narrative of like of savior, like it's not like they're putting in programs. It's not like they're getting, you know, hooking people up with resources.
Speaking of which, the Department of Justice actually just redid their budget and they had a program where if somebody was trafficked or caught a prostitution charge. Well, let me back up. A lot of people don't know it's legal in most states to arrest traffic victims and charge them with prostitution.
Wow.
Let's start with that. A lot of people don't know that. And it's also legal for police to come into sexual contact with sex workers under the guise of investigation.
Oh,
so,
great. That'll never be
abused. So sex workers are, right. So sex workers are getting raped and then they're getting arrested and then they're getting charged.
Oh,
and then
God.
When they get out, they can't get a straight job because they have a record. So there was a program in the Justice Department that was basically dedicated to that so people could get their shit expunged. When they redid their budget this year, they cut that program.
So you're saying sex workers could get it expunged when they were basically entrapped?
Yes.
By law enforcement?
Well, entrapped if it was a trafficking situation. If it was a trafficking situation. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So wait, the cops were like, I have to investigate, so I have to have sex with this person? Like it's not enough to like propose, like...
Right, yeah, it's not enough to be like, if I pay you, will you? No, it's not enough. That is enough, but they choose to abuse their privileges.
No, they're just really dedicated officers of the law.
Right.
They're really, like, really into...
Yeah.
Hey, blue lives don't deserve blue balls.
Oh my god,
right?
That's really good.
Jesus.
I like that.
Like the fellas.
That's the thing I love about you guys is that like you're so irreverent and like offensive, but you also like no one can really call you out on that stuff because people who are like civil or like you know are like less irreverent, they don't cover any of the stuff you cover. Like
no, they
you
don't.
Know, like you're actually doing the work, so to speak.
Well, I mean they can try to call us out. Yeah. It usually doesn't end well for people.
They just sound like they don't really do anything important with their lives.
Yeah, so I'm thinking about like what Phoenix Cleaters did and what she's doing here. Because, you know, I in between the 12-hour shifts, I get to scroll my little news feed. And I saw an individual that made a post and they were like, "Your Bernie Sanders voted for Sesta Fosta." And I'm thinking, all right, and you made a faux outrage post about it, and Phoenix Kalitor got her ass up, went to D.C., and lobbied with Sanders staffers about it. But you made a post.
You made a post to be angry. It's like, yeah.
Also, I love that. I mean, I know I'm, like, way too Bernie-philic. It's like, I need to move on. But, like, yeah, if you want to talk about, this is uncomfortable, no one wants to talk about this, but if we want to, like, name names about which politicians did the right thing, like, Rand Paul voted the right way on this. Like, this does make, like, this is one of those areas where, like, libertarians, not because they're, like, progressive or woke or, like, pro-sex work, but they're just, like, anti-state, anti-government.
Right.
And they're, like, horrible on civil rights. I mean, as you guys, I think, know, I got into some trouble because it looked like I was, like, aligning myself with the fascists. Who, like...
Oh, yes.
Yeah. With people who would kill me if they knew my own background, ethnically.
Right.
Now, obviously, like, I walk down the street and I'm not seen as, like, Jew, big Jewy McJew. So I get that I have, like, white privilege and non-Jew privilege. But, you know, Barbara Lee, like, thanked Rand Paul for voting, for saying something or voting the right way on something Syria-related. So I'm a little over... And, like, I like Barbara Lee and lots of the people who are critical of any kind of recognition that the right will do good things for the wrong reasons. And we don't need to praise them. It's just like, look, we should look, Rand Paul like did, you know, whatever. Anyway, slight.
No, I mean, like, honestly, the whole Sanders thing is irritating on a certain level because I think that there's the assumption that like, oh, leftists love Bernie. And it's like, I'm not obsessed with him for the same reason I don't go to church. I'm not looking for a Jewish man to save me, okay? Like you know, I don't go to church either. Like,
you're not
looking
for a Jewish man who doesn't follow Jewish law to save you.
Correct.
Who doesn't follow
Correct.
Judaism, yeah. You're not looking for a socialist Jewish man who doesn't believe in Judaism to save you. Yeah, I like it.
But, you know, the idea is, like, I like Bernie, but it is astounding to the people, like, well, he did this, and I'm like, okay, that was fucked
like
up.
Like, you have a tat of him, like a tat of Bernie Sanders.
But, I mean, I like the guy. I like a lot of his policies. I like a lot of his ideas. I've listened to, like, his old shit, like, from the 90s and the 2000s, the early 2000s, but...
Well, the cool thing is you could literally just play it, and it's the same.
Yes.
It, like, never changes.
Yes. It doesn't.
We could do a quiz, like 99
absolutely.
Or 2017. Yeah.
Exactly. But it's like, I'm also not, you know, afraid or ashamed to critique the man. Like, yeah, he fucked up on this one, you know, but it's so the whole like, but Bernie, I'm like, okay, so did Kamala Harris. Y'all still standing for y'all
right.
queen.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Come on.
And that's the other thing. Like, you come at Bernie, criticize Bernie, whatever, but like, don't then defend Hillary Clinton for like waxing poetic about using slave labor as the
right.
first lady of Arkansas.
Yes. That's different.
When it was noticed that in her book, It Takes a Village, she kind of wrote with fondness about the African-American
yes.
men in her kitchen who were slave prison laborers.
Yes.
Yeah, it's really annoying because it like, again, it just, it's so hypocritical and it cheapens, like if we actually want to push like a good agenda and we want to push people to be better on XYZ, you can't just like push certain people there because then you just undermine it and no one takes you seriously. Like you can't be like upset about some politicians for stuff, but not about using prison labor.
I think there's a branding aspect to it as well. Yeah. Because I'm a person, I've been on the stage for a long time. I got in my first rap battle and won when I was 12.
Wow.
And I've been on the stage since then, and I podcast now. I understand branding myself before privately owned social media existed. And that's for some of these people to get their clicks so that they can try to get a hit to their PayPal or whatnot. Right. That's part of their brand. And in 2016, I'm going to do it. Edit it out of your program if you need to. I know you probably don't want shit like this said on there, but, punk ass niggas like, one of them upper echelon petty bourgeois niggas where like the biggest problems is his life is what brunch he's going to take his Segway to.
Right.
He puts out that the branding that you need now is hate Bernie Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, there isn't a reason why. It's just type in his name, see if there's a headline,
right,
and pretend to be angry at it. And that's totally part of their branding. Yeah, it's just part of the hustle.
That is like, that's actually a very scary, who was I just talking about? Oh, I interviewed Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who's great. She's running for Congress against like this guy, Joe Crowley. She's from Queens. She's Puerto Rican. She's from the Bronx. She's representing an area in Queens and mm-hmm. the Bronx. He's this old Irish American guy. And he like gave some talk and was like upset that she's playing the race card or making it about race, as he said. Meanwhile, he wrote like an op-ed, like why I'm proud to be Irish American. It's so amazing. But this whole thing about like how this like fake narrative, this idea that if we offer people like programs that help everyone economically, that we're like somehow running after Trump voters. Like, I feel like Twitter has been so good about creating this like just false dichotomy. Like either you offer things like Medicare for all. I mean, it's just, I shouldn't even pay attention to it, but I feel like there some people try to pretend that programs like that are like only for white racists.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah.
It's just like...
That's what all means.
Exactly. That's really funny. Yeah, Medicare for all, asterisk, white racists who voted for Trump.
Yeah, I think that's neoliberal shit, though, is like they have a very vested interest in capitalism and maintaining social hierarchies for the most part where they are. It's like, obviously the Republicans are racist and they're on their white supremacy,
sure,
but a lot of Democrats are like, well... Let's just give everyone bootstraps and whoever makes it to the top makes it to the top.
Right.
But keep the social hierarchy in place.
Totally.
But we can just have like some gays and some women and some Negroes and stuff.
A rainbow top 10% instead of a white crusty 1%. Like that's
exactly. Yeah. But we still need to keep everybody poor. Like, we're not gonna get wild with it and give people health care and living wages and shit like that.
Right.
But
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Not just a 1%, a 1/10 of 1%.
Yeah.
The 12-hour shifts make me forget what it was that Wall Street had to do with chattel slavery in its genesis.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Like they built, black people built Wall Street?
No, that's actually like only straight white men actually know about that. Only people who have like, are in Marxist reading groups know about that. So that's some privilege right there.
Yeah. Which is actually Bernie bros, because everyone who supports Bernie is a white man.
Yeah, exactly. Ben Jealous is actually... and Nina Turner are actually self-loathing, I guess. That's the narrative.
That was the funny thing with, like, when the Bernie Bros shit first started, is people were actually telling her, like, hey, could you not? Like, you're dismissing the marginalized voices that follow him. And she stopped for, like, 2 weeks. And then their clicks went down, and then they came back hard with the Bernie Bros, and it's been Bernie Bros or white brocialists ever since.
Right.
And Halper. Didn't I hear Ben Jealous on your program
some months ago? Yeah.
Yeah, because I didn't know much about him until I heard him on your program, and I was like, this dude's kind of hard. Yeah, he's kind of a G.
He's really, like, he's very old school and, like, in a good way. Like, just, like, multiracial organizing around class issues, but also obviously like very aware of racism. And he's like super smart also. He's a Rhodes Scholar. Not that you have to be a Rhodes Scholar. Obviously people use that for evil too. Look at Rachel Maddow, Bill Clinton, but Ben Jealous used it for good. Yeah.
Russia hacked her teleprompter.
Oh my God. Wait, who? Which one? Sorry, I forgot. Joyce? Who's?
Maddow. Russia hacked her teleprompter and
Maddow, right, yeah.
Oh, to the core. And Joanne Reed, they just hacked her old blog.
They just hacked the internet all around her, though.
Yes, Russia did hack the internet.
Just to get to that, what's it called? The Wayback Machine?
Yes.
No, Ben Jealous is running for Maryland. And we actually had him on the show the day, literally the day of the election. And we were kind of joking around, like the focus of our conversation with him was, how do we keep Hillary's feet to the fire on progressive, you know, whatever, keep her feet to the fire, try to make her not as neoliberal slash hawkish as she is. And then as a joke, when he left, before he was leaving, I said to like my co-host and him, I was like, oh, we should tape two endings, one if Trump wins and one if Hillary wins. And he's like, ha, ha, ha. And he's like, as of now, you know, fear the possibility that Trump wins. And then he just laid out why he thought Trump would win. And it was because like, there are unlikely voters, and we think of unlikely voters as Black and Latino voters, but they're actually white, undereducated, like less educated, cicada voters who don't vote often. So they're not polled, because you're not polled after you like miss one cycle. And they come out for two things, extremism and celebrities. And he went through like whoever from like the Love Boat, blah, 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 from Fantasy Island, whatever. And Trump, of course, is both of those things, like an extremist and a celebrity. So anyway, but yeah, these are great. Yeah. I mean, it's just like the irony is it's totally invisibilizing and infantilizing and doing everything that people who are use the Bernie Bro narrative claim to be against. William, what's your job, like your day job?
Machine operator. Yeah. It's a packaging plant. We serve the proud duty of, and me in particular, I make sure that somewhere around 380 pouches of Sour Patch Kids a minute get produced to nourish America's children this Halloween. Nice. At times it's croutons, sometimes goldfish crackers. Because this is what's important.
Yeah. Do you hate all of those things? You must hate them all now.
I actually don't like any of the products. I mean, as far as like my own little snackiness goes, sometimes we do the goldfish cracker pretzel. So that one's dope. Yeah, you know, salt is always dope. But yeah, we run that stuff. And sometimes like on a very good day, you know, you can kind of relax and just watch your machines run and just check them and make sure they're doing well. But then you look at that conveyor belt and it's like just thousands of pouches, typically somewhere around like a little over like 40,000 to 45,000 a shift, go rolling out there. And it's like, how come we're not trying to do this with broccoli, with cauliflower, with spinach? Mm. We're subsidizing corn and packaging candy.
Brussels sprouts.
Yes, cruciferous vegetables, homie.
Yes. Let's do that. We should make a whole like an assembly line of cruciferous vegetables. I bet like some like Bill Gates or someone would pay for it. Maybe.
Should get Michelle Obama to pay for it. She's about
Totally. Oh my God. Who was it? Was it Trump who said like, it was really funny. Someone was like, she had kids killed. Like kids died because of her. Cause they were trying to move because of that move campaign. Like they would walk more than usual. So they got hit by cars. Oh my God. Yeah. I was like, I really missed that. Some of those.
What the fuck?
Memes. I swear, I'll find it. It's like an InfoWars thing. I don't know. I can't. Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, the super cuts of his quotes are going to be better than George W.'s, I tell you.
Alex's like, or Alex Jones or Trump's? It may have been a Trump thing, too.
My bad. Yeah, I was thinking Trumpel-Stiltskin. With Alex Jones.
That's amazing, yeah.
Okay, so Alex Jones is also another issue on my program with me. And laugh at him when he says the ridiculous things. Like, because anybody can go to rightwingwatch.org and get, you know, the clips that they select out.
Right.
But something I did before I started working in the factory, I had a different job and I signed paper that said I can't talk about it online.
Okay.
And but I only worked 8 hours a day. Mm. So I could listen to podcasts all the fuck long day. And between 2015 in August up to March 2017, I listened to every single episode of InfoWars.
Wow.
All 3 hours and the 2-hour Sunday show. And I closely analyze Alex Jones. Alex Jones is not some wacky, right, off his rocker conspiracy guy. He is very focused. He's very professional. And he is a neo-Confederate white supremacist to the core. He has seriously disturbing segments where I think that there may actually be people who have been murdered because of his words. Like, like a couple weeks after he did a segment about Melissa Harris Perry, and then she was out at an event with some students from a college that she deals with, and some white dude from a pickup truck went and crept up on her and threatened to harm her.
Wow.
And then, like, she's trying to get security and whatnot, and then the dude left.
Mm.
And all I want to know, I just want to know, is that guy subscribed to InfoWars in any way? Mm-hmm. Alex Jones is dangerous, man. We're also the best at tangenting.
We are. We are so good at tangenting on our show.
I mean, these people are funny and, like, not intentionally. Like, but they're actually really dangerous. I mean, same thing with Trump. We know that we don't laugh at him all the time. But sometimes I sit back and I'm like, oh, my God. Alex Jones once said that, like, the KKK were, like, people in a KKK dressed up as KKK were actually, like Seinfeld actors, like Jewish. I gotta find it.
There's a little bit of audio of me, like, 18 years ago, protesting the KKK. There's no big crowd of Antifa there supporting me, and then threatening to kill me, everything else. And it later came out that they were federal agents, like I said. It wasn't even real. I mean, quite frankly, I've been to these events. A lot of the KKK guys with their hats off look like they're from the cast of Seinfeld. Literally, they're just Jewish actors. Nothing against Jews in general, but they're leftist Jews that want to, you know, create this clash, and they go dress up as Nazis. That footage in Austin, we're going to find it somewhere here at the office where it literally looks like the cast of Seinfeld or like Howard Stern in a Nazi outfit.
And had to, like, pay us underneath it or something?
They've almost got the little curly hair down, and they're just up there heiling Hitler. You tell they're totally uncomfortable, they're totally scared, and it's all just meant to create the clash.
It was one of his best hits, but this was great. Thank you guys so much for coming on the show. And where can people find you? Where can people find the show? How can people support you and your work?
Oh, Jesus Christ. The program, the RSS feed.
The program.
Is loaded.
I love the way
in,
you call it the program. It's like, you yes. sound like a PBS watcher or something. Viewer. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And you know, and that's like a thing, right? Like, you want to be a little professional with it. Mm-hmm. Like, right now, we just moved into this, like, 2-flat duplex, so I don't have the studio set up right. That's why our audio sounds like it does. It's very airy in here.
Oh, God. I'm embarrassed that you hear my audio. Yeah.
Yeah, and mine, like, with the laptop built-in microphone, like, we usually use vocal condenser microphones.
Yeah.
And but at the same time, like, you heard us talk on this program, we approach this leftist shit talking like niggas.
Right.
Like I'm going to come in here and I'm going to be the gangster rap of black podcasts, and right. it's going to be accessible to somebody who didn't read The Nation, you know, like, and it's gonna be raw, and it's gonna be dope, and it's gonna be background music, and it's gonna be funky. And if you right. have an Apple device, you can access the program in that podcast application. It's that purple icon that kind of looks like a internet logon symbol.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could also get the Stitcher Radio application, and you can search the Black Podcast with Wine Cellar Media. The Facebook Live videos are obviously on Facebook. WineCellarMedia.com is actually the name of the page and the name of the website. $15 a year. application, PodKicker. I know some folks like that application for your podcast. Google Play.
Last FM.
Yeah.
Podbean. Of course, you can find me on Twitter. That's where I hang out.
Right. And your handle is?
At Uppity Negress. 2 P's, 2 T's, 2 S's. I talk a lot of shit over there, so
it's good. It's a good place to do it. But you also walk the walk. You went to DC. You guys should meet. Do you know Irish Singh? You guys should do his show in Chicago. I'll introduce you guys after.
So. Yeah.
Anyway, well, we'd love to have you back on again. Next time you come on, maybe you can tell us why the Nordic model doesn't work, even though it's so obvious why it wouldn't work, because you're just pushing it underground. Well, thank you guys so much. And to hear our extended interview with William and Phoenix, please go to patreon.com/the Katie Halper Show. Again, that's patreon.com/the Katie Halper Show. And shout out to Michael Graham and Progressive Army for which is how I heard about you guys. Friend of the show. Okay. Thanks, guys.
All right. Peace.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
So that that was Phoenix Kalita and William J. Jackson talking to us about all things anti-corporate and queer and sex worker involved. And it's such an important voice to hear.
I'd love to do a live taping sometime with the Black Podcast.
You know what? I said that to them. Let's do it. Aren't they great?
They're awesome.
Yeah. So we'll either have to go to Chicago or they will come here.
I think we can find a way to get to Chicago.
I think so, right? We should. Okay. Yeah, let's do it.
I'd love to do a live taping sometime with the Black Podcast.
You know what? I said that to them. Let's do it. Aren't they great?
They're awesome.
Yeah. So we'll either have to go to Chicago or they will come here.
I think we can find a way to get to Chicago.
I think so, right? We should. Okay. Yeah. Let's do it. Yeah. We had a great time talking to you, and we will see you at our next live taping June 30th at Caveat at 21 Clinton Street.
I'd love to do a live taping sometime with the Black Podcast.
You know what? I said that to them. Let's do it. Aren't they great?
They're awesome.
Yeah. So we'll either have to go to Chicago or they will come here.
I think we can find a way to get to Chicago.
I think so, right? We should. Okay, yeah, let's do it.
We're putting it out there into the universe.
Yeah, we're putting it out in the universe in the hopes that the universe will manifest it.
See you later. I'm Katie Halper. You can find The Katie Halper Show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Facebook, Twitter. Make sure you join our Patreon at patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show. We will be doing a live taping of The Katie Halper Show on June 30th at Caveat in New York City. That's 21A Clinton Street. And you can go to caveat.nyc to get tickets and get them for a discounted price. If you go now, you can use the promo code KHALPERINSIDER. That's KHALPERINSIDER. Again, that's KHALPERINSIDER. And our special guest will be none other than Thomas Frank. Thomas Frank, of course, is the author of Listen Liberal or Whatever Happens to the Party of the People and What's the Matter with Kansas. He writes for places like Harper's, The Guardian, and he is the founder of The Baffler magazine. And Thomas Frank has a brand spanking new book coming out called Rendezvous with Oblivion, Reports from a Sinking Society, and it's a collection of his writings. See you there.